Welcome back to the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Schaefer, back again with Mr. Brian Henn. Brian, it is great to see you.
It is great to see you, too. I am excited to be back for another week.
We are excited to have you, and we are not only joined by Brian, but another member of the league. This individual texted us a few weeks back saying he was willing to come on the podcast. Ongood, it is great to have you here.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be on the pod.
Ongood joins us on the pod as a newly married man, 2 months into marriage. It seems like all the boys are getting married at this point. Very few non-married boys left. Ongood, how was the transition from engaged to being married? Have you noticed any differences?
No. Erica and I were together for quite a while. Lived together for 3 years before we got engaged. So very seamless transition into the married life.
Okay. So nothing changed. Just like it feels exactly the same as beforehand.
Yeah. I mean, the commitment was always strong. I just got a ring on my finger now.
What kind of ring did you get?
I went a little bougie. So I have two. I have a two-tone gold wedding band that's like my everyday band. It's got yellow gold on the inside, white gold on the outside. And then I have I'm wearing it right now. If you guys want to see, it's right here.
Oh, ooh, that looks sick.
Yeah. Dang.
I love that.
For those not on the video portion of the podcast, which is everybody except for the three of us, very nice ring.
Thank you. And then Eric got me a rose gold band that is diamond encrusted.
Hell yeah. Wow.
Dropped a bag.
Yeah, it was a guilty pleasure. Jewelry is my guilty pleasure, I've come to realize.
I love that.
Do you ever wear it, or is this like very special?
I've worn it three times since I've had it.
Okay. Where were the occasions?
Just to work, like when I dressed up for work. So when I'm not wearing scrubs, I'll put some professional clothes on and I'll slap the band on.
Brian, what's your ring looking like? What'd you go with?
I forget the name of the metal, but it is essentially a solid silver. It is not silver, but it looks silver. Pretty simple, pretty basic. I've got it from Moyer, so you know, nice and simple.
What did you got it from where?
Moyer Fine Jewelers.
Oh, nice. I'm not in the jewelry game, so I don't know it like you guys do. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Nice and nothing quite as snazzy as Ongood. Have you found, do you play with the ring at all, or do you like mess with it or anything?
All the time.
What are your like go-to things that you do?
I like to just spin it on my finger and like bring it up to my knuckle.
Yeah.
Take it completely off, and then I just spin it right back down.
Nice. My go-to is that I take it off and like flip it the other way. Yeah.
I do have an engravement on the inside too, so I'll take a gander at it every now and then.
Nice.
You guys are really persuading me to get married.
I was going
to
say, Josh, is this working on you?
Hey, you don't have to get married.
I could just get a dope ring. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I was really into chains for a while. I don't know if you guys remember that. I had like the necklace with the golden eagle on it and then the bracelet too at one point. But they both like snapped and because they weren't that expensive. So Louise and I have
Cuban links, Josh. Cuban links.
I know. I need to get something a bit nicer, like if I'm gonna do it, because it was like, you know, it was a few years ago and we were just like entering into the world of jewelry. But I think it's something in my future. To you, to what you did on good, I would love to do the sick wedding band. I would like want some emeralds in there, you know, like something really fancy. I love the stones too.
My cousin custom made both of the bands, so he could do anything.
Is this the guy who did the watch, like that when we went to visit you in New York? Yes, yep. They put all the diamonds on it. Wow.
Yep.
That's crazy. Awesome.
I have another question for you. Did Erica take your last name?
She did not.
Okay. So I'm glad that's the answer, because I think this is an interesting conversation. So yeah. what was her, if you're willing to share, you don't have to
of
share.
Course,
it
of
can
course.
Be personal, but you know, if, what was the thought process or conversation?
So, I wanted her to take my last name, but She's got a doctorate. She's done a lot of research in her fields and publications and stuff. So she wants to maintain her name for professional reasons. But socially, she introduces herself as Mrs. Sodi. But
Nice.
for licensure and stuff like that, she kept her last name.
Nice. This I respect that. Annie and I were talking about it too, and I was just saying, like, if customarily, men were the ones that were switching their last names, like, I would have a huge problem doing that because I, similar to what you're talking about with her, like, everybody at work knows me as like Brian Henn, and if and like I'd like to think that I have a decently good reputation, and if all of a sudden one day it changed, like, obviously the people that I immediately work with would know, what my name changed to, but like other people that have heard of me or, have met me a couple times or whatever, wouldn't know that. And I think that's like, yeah, I think get that, especially for her, like all the work that she's put in for her degrees, it makes sense. I get that.
I tried to fight the battle, but it was not going to happen.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Angad, what made you want her to take your last name?
So I think it's because of like the traditional Indian culture where women always take the last name, but I'm also thinking about like raising a family. I want everybody to have the same last name just to be like one family unit.
Yeah.
That was
That was
the main reason why.
that. So Annie actually ended up adding Hen as like kind of a second last name for her. So she still has her, maiden name, but she added that on, and she did it mostly because of that. Like, she was like, she wanted us to be able to be like a family unit with all the same
Exactly.
last name. So yeah. Interesting.
She said she might consider it a little bit later.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Would you do like the hyphenated last names then for children? Are those on the near-term horizon for you, or is that like a ways off?
No, I don't think. I think they'll just have my last name.
Oh, really? So that was been established that you're the kids get your name.
She knows that. 'Cause that
He's the
was the
one
whole
putting in all
thing.
the work,
She's
Josh.
like, why do you want That's true. She's like, why do you want me to change my last name? Like, our kids are gonna have your last name already. And I'm like, okay.
Deal.
Wow. You didn't
That's
even
funny.
consider like the hyphenated last name. You're just going straight for now. They're
Yeah,
Sodis.
they're
Nice.
Sodis, exactly.
That's great. So how'd the wedding go? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was a marathon. It was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like there was an event each day, lots of driving, traveling. The planning was like so stressful. Like we wanted everything to be perfect, but we're like, there's so many days and there's so many opportunities for something to go wrong. Fortunately, nothing did. The only thing was the day of the reception on Sunday, Connecticut had like really bad storms. Well, our hotel was in Connecticut, but then our wedding was actually in New York, so that we had to cross over the border. But anyway, the storms were like really bad and it flooded a lot of the inner roads. But we had a bus, so the bus had no issues driving. But a lot of the cars coming in like struggled to come up the hills and stuff. So that was the only problem that happened.
Did
I'd
the
call that a
storm?
win.
Yeah, that
That's
seems good.
yeah.
Oh yeah. It was I could not have asked for it to go any better.
Did the storm spook your horse? For those of you who don't know, Angad
Well,
went into the wedding on a
yeah.
horse.
I was told that it was an elephant. Just that was
So
the
there's
rumor going
actually
around.
my parents thought it was an elephant. My dad was like, "Oh, Angad's going in on an elephant." That's what he told us. And I'm like, "I'm pretty sure he's not." And dad, to be honest, that seems like a little racist, but unless you're specifically sure that you heard that, but it turns out it was a horse. So how was the horse, Angad? Did you feel like a
That happened
king?
on Saturday when I did our traditional Sikhism wedding. So I practice Sikhism. And I actually looked into getting an elephant, but it's illegal in the state of New York to have an elephant outside of a, like a preservation or a zoo or something. So
That is
the horse was
fascinating.
the only option. And traditionally in India, the male or the groom comes in on
That is so sick.
an
That is.
elephant.
Wow.
So other than the elephant piece, what are some of the main differences between like a is would you call it a Sikh wedding or a Sikhism wedding versus, I guess, the traditional American wedding? What are some of the other differences?
So the attire is clearly different. The ceremony itself is There are some similarities to like a Catholic mass. So there are like hymns, or what we call them hymns. So there's songs that are played. The actual wedding ceremony is it's called Lava Fera, and there's you do four laps around basically like the shrine, and each lap signifies like a like you have a love for your partner, and then you have like trust, like never be faithful. So each lap signifies a value of the marriage, and then after that's done, the families and the friends that have joined congregate in like a hall to just enjoy like a vegetarian meal after, and then that's it. So it lasts the before the ceremony is the groom's processional. So that's when I come in on the horse, and that's just like a dance party for 30 minutes. And then the bride's family welcomes me outside of the temple, and then welcomes me into the temple. And Erica can't, I can't see Erica this whole time, so I have my own veil actually. So I'm wearing this
Awesome.
veil. And once I get to the entrance, like I can take the veil off, and then I go into the hall, and then she comes behind me. So the first time I see her is when we're in front of like the equivalent of God in our religions.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Did you cry?
No, the first time I cried was actually, so we had four different celebrations, or not celebrations, ceremonies.
You had a lot of emotional test opportunity
Yeah,
to
so
cry.
the very first one was in Gainesville when we had to get the court marriage, so our court documents were signed. That was the first time I like shed a tear because it was like officially
Nice.
done. And then after that, it was just like seeing Erica, like having this joy of her in all the different dresses that she was wearing. Like it was cool, but I didn't cry because I knew that we were officially married.
Yeah.
So it was all good. I did do a first look in the traditional like white wedding dress on Sunday. That was really nice. But yeah.
Awesome.
You
Josh,
left. Oh, go
if
ahead.
I was just gonna say, if you were to get married, do you think you would cry?
I've been trying to cry more recently, honestly. I don't know about you guys. I don't know how often you guys cry, but I've been thinking about I was talking to one of my friends a few months ago. I was like, I never cry. Like, I can't even remember the last time I cried about something. And I think crying, like in my brain, I'm like, it's a good thing to do. But I think like when it comes to personally executing it, I'm like, no, I don't need to cry about it. It's not a big deal. So I've been trying to harness crying more, and I've cried a few times in the last few months,
Progress.
trying to get the numbers up for sure. I think at a wedding, I don't know if I would cry. I think I probably would. Ours would probably be very small, like something like you did on good, like at the courthouse, like to get not the other stuff, but that kind of thing. So I think it would be nice, and I would cry. But yeah, I'm not opposed to crying.
I cried on my wedding day when I was at the altar. I'm a proponent of it.
I actually forgot to mention I cried a lot during the vows. That's nice. That was the most crying that happened.
Do you guys cry that much in general? Like, would you say, do you know the last time you cried before your wedding day or since?
Like when you say cry, like does shedding a tear count as crying?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, we're not like bawling. I mean, we're still very early in the developmental phase of crying, right? Like one tear for us, I think, unless you guys are huge criers, in which case,
No. I shed
yeah.
tears all
Hell
the
yeah, bro.
We're men, Josh.
Yeah. One tear only, guys.
I shed tears here and there all the time.
Really?
Like if I'm watching something that like resonates with me emotionally, like I'll shed a tear.
Yeah, like Devontae Adams to the Jets, so you're like,
No,
oh
no, no.
shit,
That no.
dude.
I needed an offensive line change to happen. The last time I cried like a core memory is when LeBron won in Cleveland. I like shed multiple tears when LeBron won
Was that the last time you
in
cried too, Josh?
Cleveland. No, I think the
You
last time I
simps.
cried was the last time I cried was when I went to visit my friend in Tennessee after boys weekend, and I cried when I left visiting her because it was really fun. So what about you, Brian?
Nice.
When was the last time you cried? Was your wedding?
No, my grandfather passed away like 4 weeks ago now. His funeral is actually this weekend. So,
Oh, man.
on one of my, it was, I mean, it was time. He had been mentally gone a long time. So, very much expected. And but I like on one of my drives to Seymour kind of gave myself like, a time to think through like old memories with him and stuff and cried a little bit during that. But yeah, I think before that though it was my wedding.
That's nice. I mean, it's very sad that your grandfather died, but nice that you had a moment of reflection.
Yeah, definitely.
If
In a
like
way, for Trini V, right? Like you have to cry every day to have like an actual day, right? Isn't that part of a speech?
Yes, definitely.
Wow.
It's yeah, totally. Like experience something that moves you to tears, I think, is
Yeah,
what
there
the
you go. Yep.
yeah, totally.
Well, I'm sorry about your grandfather passing, Brian. I didn't know that that happened. That
Thank you.
sucks.
It's okay. It was yeah, like I said, it was very much time. My grandmother had passed away like 4 or 5 years ago, and I can honestly say he had zero interest in being alive pretty much that whole time. Like pretty much once she was gone, he was not really that interested in going, and but his or been interested in being alive. And but his body just kind of kept going. So I'm in a weird way happy for him that he's done. But yeah, I mean, it'll be, sad. He was really the only grandparent I ever had a relationship with. So that was, that's tough. But yeah, like the last time Annie and I went to visit him, he was like, he obviously he was very and didn't really know what was going on, but he was telling us in his room like that he didn't want to be alive anymore. He wanted to be dead. So it was, I think it was definitely time.
That is an
Yeah, those
intense
are
conversation. Jeez.
tough conversations to have, especially when they're so like you say, like your grandfather's mentally gone, but he's still aware enough to the point where he can say like what his
I
desires
know.
are.
Totally. Yeah. No, it's end of life is weird. I read a book about like aging and the way that the West handles aging versus other countries and stuff, and it's pretty messed up. Like I don't know. It was a very interesting book. It essentially just talked about how like the whole concept of aging in America is about making it as unimpactful on the rest of us as it possibly can be, aka, put them in nursing homes and only have to go visit them once a week or whatever. And like, to the rest of us, like they just exist in that home,
That's
but
funny that you
in
bring that
their
up, because my family is like completely against nursing homes. Like my grandmother probably needs a nursing home at this point, and my dad and his brother and sister are like, every time I bring that up, because she needs the care that she needs, they're like aggressively angry towards me. They're like, absolutely not. Like, how dare you even bring something of that up?
Interesting. Yeah.
Like they don't trust anybody to care for their parents, nor do they like think it's appropriate. They think they're like giving up on their parent, essentially.
Totally. Josh, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can my grandmother also died about a month ago, which is
I'm sorry to
weird.
hear
It's
that. I'm
yeah.
sorry, man.
No, it's fine. It was so this is I think it's a perfect example of what you're saying, Brian. And like my family, like my grandmother had gotten to the point where she was just a burden on everyone, like and she was a mean woman, right? Like my grandmother was not a nice, like grew up in Eastern Kentucky, like her partner was like a bootlegger or her husband was a bootlegger in Eastern Kentucky, like a harsh upbringing, and just very bitter in general, but also in a nursing home. And I think to that point, it was like everybody is, it's never, it's not, I, and this is maybe more the experience of my family. And I think to your point, Brian, of the Western culture in that everyone is kind of ready for that person to go, and so when they do, it's almost like a relief to people, like
Yep.
I would say in this scenario it was my, I mean, we're all of us are really getting to the point now where having a grandparent that is still alive is kind of rare, right? We're old, like we're almost 30 at this point. Like most of our grandparents are probably in their 80s or, some 90s if they're still alive. So it resonates with me. I mean, when my grandparent passed, I wouldn't say I was close to her at all. She was really mean to my mom, so I always kind of held it against her for that. And, whatever. But I still have one grandparent who's alive, and you know, we used to be close, but now mentally she's just like gone. And it's just really weird to see people like that, especially when the values are not like, oh, this person is aging, we need to all like, you know, get around them and support them. It's like, let's just get them out of like, you know, being the least convenient. So it's, I would agree with it.
Yeah. It's like, part of me is like, oh man, I'm totally just gonna, you know, have my aging grandparent live with me, or my, you know, aging parent live with us or whatever. But then it's like, when you actually think about that, you're like, oh, I don't want that at all. Like, but that's kind of, it's tough. Like, I mean,
have you guys talked about that with your partners about like, if you would let a parent live with you at that point? Cause it's a very realistic conversation. I mean, at this point to have had it, have you guys chatted about it with your partners?
I have personally, like if my parents ever needed to move in, same thing with her parents, like we would welcome it with open arms, but with the caveat that the plan is that we try our best to make sure that like, they're not dependent on us.
Mm.
Like we can get put a roof on their head, but over their head, but we can also give them the support that they need so that we can still live our lives and, you know, continue on with our careers and our support our families while also taking care of them in a way.
Yeah, we have not discussed that, but that is actually a very good point, and it probably will now be discussed in the next couple months. That's you guys have encouraged me. That's a good point.
We need you to report back next week, Brian.
I will
do a check-in to see whether or not you're going to allow Annie's parents in the house.
Yes. Yes. I will. That will be our cliffhanger for next week. Everybody stay tuned.
It's not an easy like thing. I mean,
no. Oh, no.
Louise and I have talked about it, and I think obviously while we're living in an apartment, the answer is like, no, you know, like we have two bedrooms and just, you need to have a little bit of extra space, I think, for that to even be like a legitimate option. Mm-hmm. And I also have siblings, which is really nice too, which helps kind of with like sharing the load. But I think for us, it would be very challenging to have either set of parents kind of like move in with us just because of the dynamic of all of those relationships. I think it's just a very tricky thing to navigate. I'm not saying never, ever, you know, obviously things change as you grow older, you get more space, that kind of thing becomes easier. But when you're living in a 2-bed, 1-bath apartment, it's like hard to even comprehend what that would look like.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Well, there's no easier way to transition from dead grandparents to fantasy football than that. So I think it's time we go ahead and jump into last week's results.
That was a good therapy session.
I hope you guys all get a good cry in at some point this week. That's my homework for the boys.
Everybody
go and get a cry in
on whether you will allow your in-laws to live with you.
Yeah, post in the group me whether or not you would let your parents live with you. Yeah, that's fun. Okay. Yes, let's get into last week's results. That was a nice discussion. I'm glad we all got to talk about that. That's not sarcastic. I actually do really appreciate that. But the table saw a great week this week. We saw Sloan come back alive, posting some memes in the chat. He's getting ready. Finally had a decent finish. Obviously a lot going on. Brian, I want to kick it over to you to start us off. What did you think about last week's results?
I think he had, you know, a really solid outing for him. You know, getting what that fifth place spot, I think, was really big for him, just to put a little bit more distance between him and the bottom. I also want to call out Austin's team. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think Austin has been probably the single unluckiest fantasy manager so far this season. I feel like he has gotten hit so hard with injuries and like weird, you know, like his bye weeks haven't landed well so far. He's missed, you know, he's had situations where like he's thought he was going to have players, you know, up until, you know, a couple, you know, day of games and stuff. So I think for him, a second, you know, second to last place performance is really tough to swallow, especially because it further pushes him. He's now 12 points out of a playoff spot and even 5 points behind Dylan. So it's probably, you know, at least 2 more weeks before he even gets into that fifth place spot, let alone playoff contention. And for a team that I definitely thought was going to be, you know, competing right up in that fourth, you know, for that fourth playoff spot, I think it's been a tough turn of events for him. He's passed Saquon's by. Hopefully JT is healthy now for him. So, you know, maybe things are turning around, but he's just like a lot of underperformances. He's had to, you know, he had the tight end situation this week. You know, I think things have not broken his way. So I feel for you, Austin.
Yeah, I think that is a fair piece of analysis. It is fair. I might push back. There's also an argument that Austin might have been the single luckiest team up to this point. When you look at that roster right at this minute, you're just kind of like, oof, you know, like the JT Saquon obviously carries you. We talked about it last week. I don't want to do any more harm there than I did. I actually texted Austin right after last week, like, what would you want for Saquon? You know, and then obviously it was a joke, but yeah, huge, huge, unluckiness for him, I guess, with these injuries. I think he's kind of water finding its level is where I would feel about that. Go ahead.
I think you also toss in, though, the Bryce Young benching after like
that sucks.
Three
that
weeks. Sucks. That's tough. Like he for a long time was sitting at two quarterbacks, you know, back in like year two or something, finally gets, you know, gets that top quarterback option, and it ends up being Bryce Young, and Bryce Young is the only quarterback from that draft class that has been benched.
Yeah. Yeah, that is painful. I mean, Bryce Young, I don't know if he will ever play again. I think there's a chance that he does, but Andy Dalton has definitely proven that team is not as garbage as you would have thought they were at the beginning of the year. Angad, what were your thoughts about last week's results? Obviously, you know, honestly a bad week for you. I would say you're kind of taking that, like, not finishing last place. Anything that's not last is a win. I know second to last, obviously not great, but how'd you feel about last week's results? Or third to last last week?
I think I'm doing what I'm expecting now, whereas in the early parts of the season, I was exceeding expectations by a long shot. Every time I look at the results at the end of the week, I just think back to the first pod about how Brian expected me to finish last every week, and I have still yet to finish last.
I was literally about to say that I owe you an apology for that, because remember saying that, and I just looked, and I'm like, he has literally not finished last yet, so props.
Yep. I do want to give props to Mike's team, being that he didn't start a quarterback and still managed to put up 150, almost 154 points and get first place, and I'm shocked at the consistency of Tommy's team. Like, his starters are like bona fide starters in fantasy football, and his bench is a little worrisome, but he has his picks. He has Nick Chubb coming back from injury. I think he's set up to win again, considering that his starters are just guaranteed like double digit points every week in and week out. So, and hitting with Brock Purdy from the waiver wire to fill in another quarterback, like, especially in a two quarterback dynasty league, it's fortunate, and also, you know, props on his draft on the first draft startup.
The Tommy stuff is disgusting, I think, at this point. You're just disgusted by it. I mean, the fact that Brock Purdy was this good, think about how many shit quarterbacks have been picked up off the waiver wire over the course of our league for bye week fill-ins. And Tommy picks up the one who is a late round talent who is probably generational. Like, I'm not saying Brock Purdy, maybe not generational, but a top 10 quarterback. I think it's hard to argue that he's not. Mm-hmm. And it seems like everything just always turns right on his team every time. Justin Fields, like, being a great fill-in. Now he'll have Russell Wilson, who knows. But Rodgers picks up Davante Adams the week that Justin Fields gets benched. Like, you would expect things to get better there. Henry, incredible on the Ravens at 30 years old. It does not matter how old these guys on his team get. It seems like every year they're better than they were the last because they're part of Tom's Trojans.
Yep. And the James Conner also, like, I expected him to fall off like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's still like putting up RB1 numbers.
I expected so many players on Tommy's team to fall 2 years ago, and to Josh's point, they haven't. It's crazy.
Unbelievable consistency.
I want to say too, it deserves more mention than we've given it so far. Josh, I know it's hard for you to do this, but Mike's team finishing first this week is insane.
It's like crazy.
It is insane. And when you look at the performances that he got from his team, like he would have cleared second place by probably 20 or 30 points, you know, with AR starting. Like, it's Deontay Johnson, 17 points, Najee Harris, who has been terrible for like the better part of 3 years now, 19 points, freaking Ray Davis with over, you know, 16 and a half points. It's just everybody showed up.
He had Sean Tucker on the bench with 30 something too.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, and if he'd started Trevor Lawrence, he would have gotten 17 more.
Yeah.
I mean, fantasy football is easy when your guys all put up 15 points or more. It's a week like this for Mike's team where you're just like, oh, I'm going to put this up every single week. What, like, why would these guys not put up the same stat line? It's a big week for him. I'll have Mike's corner later on as we typically talk about it. I don't think now's the time because we're talking about results. Yeah, it's a nice win for Mike. He gambles and it pays off for him. To be honest, he texted me on that Sunday morning because I put in the group chat that Drake May was for sale. And he was like, what do you want for Drake May? And I was like, Trevor Lawrence, straight up. Like, let's do it. And he, I think, thought about it because it's not a horrible trade. You're not like immediately, absolutely no.
Not with how bad Trevor Lawrence has looked.
Trevor Lawrence has been a stinker. Yeah. And Drake May is kind of the unknown. And didn't look bad in his first week, by the way. Not a bad start considering how horrible Jacoby Brissett has been. But he turns me down. He gambles. Huge week for him. As you mentioned, Ongood, huge week for Tommy. It seems like his team is just doing great every single week. He's also had like no injury concerns to deal with, really. I mean, Nick Chubb was obviously injured at the start of the year, but it seems like everyone is just there for every single game. My trash ass team finally makes a little bit of a comeback this week to finish second after finishing last place the week prior. Still dealing with a lot of injuries. Obviously, no Cup, no Devontae Adams. Aaron Jones on bye, so it's nice to be able to get a little bit of momentum up again. You did touch on Sloan Bryan. I think it's a big week for him. Obviously, Sloan just doesn't want to finish last. He put Tyreek Hill up on the trade block today. We had been texting about it. We had some drama about me backing out of the trade after it was accepted, and we can talk about that more if you guys want to, but it's good to see him get engaged again. I think if there's anybody in the league that needs to do well to continue to care, it's probably Sloan. So I think it's good for all of us when he has a week like this.
Yeah. I agree. I think we should dive in real quick to Textgate a little bit. Josh, I'm going to give you the floor first to defend your position, and then Angad and I can evaluate.
So I'm not going to say what the offer is because Sloan also didn't disclose the offer. So I'll let him disclose it if he wants to. I just don't want to, you know, negotiate it against myself unless other people want to do it. So I text Sloan out of the blue, this for Tyreek Hill. He's like, a couple hours later, he's like, yes, I'll do it. And then I start looking into Tyreek Hill a little bit more. And I say, oof. 30.6 years old, turns 31 in March. No one knows exactly when Tua is going to come back, right? I mean, they say he's going to come back this year, but we don't know when. That team is going to suck, right? That Dolphins team is really bad without Tua, and it's not like they're great with Tua. And at 30 and a half years old, turning 31, a receiver that is so dependent upon speed to be dominant, you don't want to get on the wrong end of that deal. And my thought was after Sloan said yes, I texted him all those things of what I was concerned about. And I said, I just don't think I can do it. Like, this is the best I can do now. And then I texted him some other offers for Tyreek and Mixon that kind of got us close, but we never really came around on the plan. I think for me, it's not something I like to make a habit of because I think people already, are not inclined to want to trade with me. And so if you do shit like this, it just makes people not want to deal with you at all. But at the end of the day, if the offer is not in Sleeper, it's not an offer that is actually made. So anything over text is just kind of getting us there. And there is something to Mike's point too, about if somebody accepts your first offer or nothing else, that does scare you a little bit, right? That you might be giving up too much.
So I have two questions. One, why make an offer on somebody that you haven't fully thought through yet?
That's the only question I have too, Ryan.
And two, okay, so yeah, so that's question one. So just to keep these separate. So that's question one. Question two, how much of an impact did Sloan's immediate yes say? And why are you allowing somebody who checks the Sleeper app like twice a week, if that, get in your head about how you value a trade or a player?
Here's the thing, Brian. I've told you this before. I like having the same players on all of my teams. And if you look at my Reddit team and our boys league team, there's a lot of overlap in terms of the players that are on both. So Tyreek Hill would be another overlap player that's on both teams. And so in a vacuum, I would have done the deal for Tyreek Hill, right? Because I was just getting some sensors out there of like, I would do this deal. It was not only looking at more about Tyreek, but also taking a second to say, okay, look at my team. I have a very, very old team, right? Devontae, Kupp, Travis Kelce, DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Diggs, Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara. These are players you've had on your fantasy team for the last 6 years, and they've been great producers. And it's not that I don't want to go in to win this year. I do. But I just said, what would Tyreek Hill truly add here at this point? If Tua's playing, Tyreek is an undoubted like starter on the team. There's no question. But is he that much better than the next best player for the assets that I would give up? Because once I trade for Tyreek, nobody else will buy him from me ever again, right? I am going to be the final Tyreek Hill owner. And so if my team was a little bit younger, it's a risk that I would be a little bit more open to taking. And I gave Sloan a consolation offer that I don't think is that much different than what my original offer was. it's not that it's definitely worse, but it's not horribly worse. It's not like insulting. And so that is the piece, is I am addicted to trading too, also is the big piece. And so I see a potential value in Tyreek Hill and I buy vets. And so I'm like, let's go for it. But at the end of the day, you're going all in in Dynasty. I struggle with it at this point. I used to say go all in, but you need to be good every year, good enough every year to make the playoffs. Cause 3 weeks is so short. You don't want to handicap yourself in the future. You just want to be able to make the playoffs, and that's all that matters. So I didn't think he put me in a guaranteed championship slot. I'm probably going to lose to Tommy anyway, so I might as well at least keep my future if I'm going to do that.
The Trojans are inevitable.
They are.
You know,
I yield the floor to you. What's your thoughts?
The thing is, if this is my take, if Sloan gives any ounce of pushback to Josh and still folds, Tyreek is on Josh's team. We won't be having this conversation if Sloan gave any ounce of pushback to you.
I think that there is a chance of that being the case. Cause I think the initial offer I gave was good, but I don't know. It just, when I looked at my team, I was like, what am I doing? Like, what is the goal of this trade? What does it do for me?
If you just negotiated a little bit, you don't think the trade would have went through?
We tried to negotiate afterwards, but I feel like once I backed out and I think the offers I gave, they were probably on the lower end. I think that people really haven't proven they're paying a ton for vets right now. So I don't know. Maybe he does get a great deal for Tyreek and you, one of you guys. I could see you going for Tyreek, Brian, but I don't know if he's a little bit too old for you at this point. So I'm not sure where you're at.
Yeah, Tyreek is a weird one. Sloan's texted me multiple times about it. I get the feeling that Sloan wants picks and young players. I feel like my young players are not as good as Tyreek, but they're good young players now. Like, it's no longer speculation with a lot of my guys. So I don't really feel like I have the right combination of assets to get Tyreek. Like, I do want Tyreek. He is an intriguing player, and I think he increases my team's ceiling. But I just I don't know. I've struggled to come up with the right deal that fits what Sloan's looking for, and you know, allows, you know, and falls into my timeline. My biggest frustration with what has happened here is that from the sound of it, you gave a very fair offer to Sloan for Tyreek, got turned down, and I worry that this further incentivizes you to lowball on your trade offers, because the one time that you've come out of your shell to give.
My deals are good at this point, Brian. I think
they are better.
Old
Josh.
Reputation that
they are better.
The page has been turned, right? Like, I don't think there's been a deal in recent memory where it was a fleecing. Like,
the deals haven't been the offers. The offers that get turned down are sometimes fleecings.
Brian, your valuation of your players is so
insane. Love my players, Josh.
You fucking love your players, and it and. Getting you, like, we've been in the league together for years at this point. I know there's been times where you have not liked your team, and then you're just willing to like jump off of guys immediately. Your team right now is borderline untouchable in terms of what you're actually looking like. You would need 150 cents on the dollar. So probably to you, it looks like I'm still lowballing, which is fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe it does incentivize it. You've really seen the trade slow down in the league overall, I think, at this point. I think people are just much more patient. We talked about it last week. Ongood, I think you may be most improved trader at this point of the league. So huge kudos to you. Your deal for Rashad White was looking like an awesome trade. One of the good greatest of the season. No offense.
Talk about a fleecing.
It was, yeah, in was retrospect, that, even really 2 weeks later. Yeah, it's a fleecing.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
It helps that I have Bucky Irving, and I was trying to sell Rashad White very high, but I knew he wasn't going to be the greatest because his efficiency is just crap.
Horrible. Horrible.
It's so bad. And
I couldn't believe he was so good last year. That was crazy that he ended up being that good.
Well, it was a passing game. Like, he was so good in the passing game. And their offense is so, like, pass heavy. But when you see what, like, since I'm in Florida, I get to watch the Bucks every Sunday or whenever they play. And there's holes for him to run through, and he just doesn't run through them.
I didn't need to know that, Ongood.
And then Bucky comes in, and I'm like, okay, like, yeah, he's smaller, but the hole is the same size. So, yeah, I was like, yeah, I want to sell him. He's young, and he was like RB5 last year, I think. He was top 10.
Oh, for
very,
sure.
Very touchdown dependent, but. Like, I don't want to sell him too short. And when you put Brian Robinson in the trade, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I think when Colin was on the pod last, like, he's bounced around. He's like Brandon Cooks in the actual NFL.
Yeah.
Like, 1,000-yard receiver every year, and nobody wants him. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, of course I'll take Brian Robinson. Then you throw in a Khalil Shakir, who now has Amari Cooper on the team, which I think might help his stock. I think he's like a solid wide receiver two in the NFL. I don't think he could be a one. So I hope that it just helps like the defense aim more towards Cooper.
I just want to clear the air real fast. I want to correct you in that I didn't just toss in Khalil Shakir as like a courtesy offer. It was good negotiating on your part. You should own up for that and like take credit for it. But I do want to just PSA to the league members, I did not just hand on good Khalil Shakir.
That's true.
In that
that's
deal,
true.
But yes,
it Brian was awesome loves deal. Khalil Shakir. He was going to get Khalil a first Shakir. For Khalil Shakir if he would have done it in that deal.
Yeah. Wow. A lot of people are regretting not trading for Khalil Shakir. I believe that deep in my heart.
Roster clogger. It's okay, Brian. It's someone you never want to start, but you would keep on your team.
That's Mike's fucking quarterbacks, by the way. Now, I'm sure he's going to be regretting this very soon.
Someone's going to trade for him. Go ahead, Brian.
I want to hear, like, give me your 10,000-foot view of your team, what your goal is this season, when you think you're going to make the playoffs next, all that.
Every week, I am constantly, like, following Sleeper because – or, like, our projections and whatnot. Because I have my first round pick. And the way the season has gone, it doesn't look like I will get the first overall pick. But the pride in me, like, I don't want to finish last. I hate finishing last. But it's also good if I get the first overall pick. And then I'm looking at the 2025 draft class. I'm like, nobody is really that appealing to me. The only one is Travis Hunter, but who knows what he does in the NFL. I don't think he's big enough to play like a out wide cornerback. He might be able to play slot. But if I draft him as a wide receiver and he ends up playing defense, like, I just screwed myself. So
I had never thought about that. That's very interesting.
That would be hilarious. That would like so happen to you.
Exactly. So like I go into every week like hoping I don't finish last, but I wouldn't be upset if I did finish last. In terms of like how my players are panning out, I hope there's like everybody's turning the corner, like the young guys. I hope that Romeo Doubs continues to improve, even though he had an issue with his target share the last week, got suspended from the team, which really sucks, but he came back and scored 2 touchdowns. I hope Quentin Johnson starts to turn a corner. He had a couple of touchdowns early in the season, but now he's falling back to where he was before. I'm sure they're going to draft a receiver next year too to help with that offense. The running backs I'm you know, excited about with Bucky Irving. I hope Brian Robinson stays along with the Commanders. There's a lot. There's nobody that's like I know is going to be a solid performer other than my quarterbacks with Dak and Jordan Love. Although Dak is starting to scare me a little bit this year too. So yeah, outside of the quarterbacks, like I don't feel confident that my position players are solid like starters. But they have the potential to at least be like a wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3, and flex options, and then I can just build from the draft up. So my playoff hopes are going to be a couple years out, if not like 4 or 5.
Okay, no, I respect that. I think that makes sense. I'm curious who, if you had to pick one player, and it'll be 2 players in total, but if you had to pick one player that you're most excited about, like in terms of biggest surprise for you this season and your biggest disappointment, who would be your answers to those questions?
Darnell Mooney has definitely been the biggest surprise. I knew going to Atlanta, he would have a better option or a better opportunity at success with a pass heavy offense with Kirk being there. And Drake London is obviously he's a clear cut wide receiver 1, and Darnell is a perfect for wide receiver 2, and they're using him in the best way that he can be used, and I'm glad it's working out for him and for my team as well. Player that I'm disappointed in the most, I don't even want to say I'm disappointed because I was probably just raising expectations because again he's on a new team, is Jerry Jeudy. But that organization is just. It's not even the organization. It's Deshaun Watson. Like that guy needs to go out of the league. He needs to just disappear.
It feels like it's close to happening at this point. Yeah,
he's holding back that team so much. Now Amari Cooper is leaving. I don't think that does anything for Jerry Jeudy to turn him around. So like he got paid a lot of money too. So I was hoping that he'd translate that into some production, but he's not. And obviously, like some of the young guys, like Quentin Johnson, like I want him to continue to improve. But they're a very run heavy offense too with Jim Harbaugh there, and J.K. Dobbins has looked great. So why not keep feeding him the ball? So those are probably the two to three players that have been keeping my eye on the most.
It's really interesting to look at your team on good because it's truly a testament to how. You know, obviously, we've gone through the trade history of your team in the past, right? We're not going to relitigate that. The point more so is for a team that's teetering on the edge, how important the draft picks become and how unlucky you have gotten with the draft picks at this point, I would say. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Charbonnet, Quentin Johnston, Jahan Dotson, right? These are pretty high draft capital players that... Yep. I don't think we're bad picks at the time. I mean, all of them made sense where you got them. Like, I don't think anything was a big reach. I know Isaiah Spiller is another person you kind of took in the mid second in the past, right?
Yep.
Like, it has been very unlucky in the draft for you. I think if you even get like a 50% hit rate, your team is on a totally different trajectory than it's at right now. So I say that not to be discouraging, but rather to say, like, hopefully your bad draft luck does not continue and that you start to get a little bit more positive momentum.
I completely forgot about Jahan Dotson, honestly. And then when the trade happened to Philly, I was like, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah, yeah, that was painful.
That sucked.
Yeah. I like with your draft capital, kind of where you stand over these next couple of years, because you have your own picks, as we've talked about. You have a couple of, you know, a couple thirds, a couple fourths, you know, each of the next couple of years. And honestly, I would argue your picks in the third round have probably been some of the best picks you've had, like third and fourth round, because you had Romeo Doubs as a third round pick. You had Braylon Allen this year as a fourth round pick. Looks like a really solid, you know, solid selection. So
Bucky Irving.
Yeah, very good point. So
don't let Onga draft in the third and fourth, guys.
I know.
Watch out for...
he has three third rounders this year. So that's Danger. His sweet spot.
I just need one to hit. That's it.
Yeah. And I think it lines up well because you've got Sloan's pick in 2027, his first rounder in 2027.
Huge so trade. Like, great timing on that, trade. By the way.
And you get like, so I think it's good because, you know, these next 2 years, you build your foundation, and then 2027, two first rounders. You're on.
I hope Dylan Raiola is there, because I hope he turns out to be the next Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
There's a chance Sloan's 2027 first could be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
I think there's a definite non-zero chance of that.
Yep. He's got to offload some of his like Tyreek Hill type assets to avoid that from happening.
Yeah, because he doesn't have his 2026 first either. He traded that away for Miles Sanders. And I don't think he's going to get a first back for Joe Mixon if he tries to move him. I don't know what team is paying that. I think that Montgomery is kind of like the ceiling of what you could get for that kind of player at this point. And I think you have a little bit more faith in Montgomery than you probably do in Mixon at this point of the career.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that totally.
You like Mixon more?
Mixon's not competing for carries.
Montgomery just gets touchdowns, though. Team scores points. Like, they score rushing touchdowns. That's what they do.
Yeah, but then you would argue he's touchdown dependent.
Yeah, but he gets touchdowns. Like, it's not like he's a touchdown dependent guy that you're like, like Jahmyr Gibbs gets a lot of yards but doesn't get touchdowns. I think David Montgomery is a higher RB than Gibbs is this year.
Sure. I think I like Mixon's floor more than I like Montgomery's floor.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, you timed the trade perfectly, so there's all props to you.
And Sloan's reaping Mixon's benefits. Like, he had a great week coming back from injury.
Yes, 100%. Totally. Yep. Angad, I also want to compliment you on the Jordan Love pickup. That has been absolutely huge for you. I think you picked him up as a free agent, right? Like, that was
I drafted him.
You did.
Oh, in really? The startup draft.
I did. In the startup draft. That's crazy. 17th round. Wow. Yep.
I just want to comment on my draft. Like, if you look back at my draft, the startup, I wish I didn't make any trades at all.
Was it really good?
I drafted Dak, Kamara, Tua, Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love. I had Calvin Ridley, DJ Moore, I can't remember who else, Aaron Jones. I had all these guys on my team. I didn't have Joe Mixon. I traded Brian for Joe Mixon. And then I'm just thinking back, like, why couldn't I just stick it out? Like, I had five starting QBs, like stud starting QBs on my team.
That's so unlucky. Yeah. I mean, it's a testament, though, to how far the league has come.
Yes.
And it really shows you that Dylan had a huge advantage on us in the startup draft, which is why his team has been so relevant, because he had done Dynasty before.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he had done Dynasty a year before we started, so he had a taste for it.
Okay.
And that first year in Dynasty, it is, if you don't know what you're doing, you're just like, I mean, some of us obviously got luckier than others, but at the end of the day, we were all still kind of like running around like chickens with our heads cut off, trying to figure out how to value all of these players and picks. And at this point, I think all of us just know it kind of on gut feel around like what we should trade for what.
Yeah, I was a very clear example of not knowing what the hell I was doing at the beginning of this league.
You're not going to quit, though, right, Angad?
No. Mike actually texted me when earlier in the season when my team was actually performing. He was like, isn't this fun, like figuring it out from the bottom? I'm like, it actually has been enjoyable.
You texted me earlier in the season that you were thinking about quitting and giving
up. I was, because I wasn't enjoying like my picks panning out. Like nobody was panning out at that time.
It was bad. Yeah.
It was the outlook was bad, but the performance has not been.
No, it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, any more questions for Angad on his team?
No, I don't think I have anything else. Angad, anything else you want to share about your team before we move on?
I don't think so. Just looking forward to the draft.
Wait, who has Austin been targeting on your team? You mentioned that Austin has been texting you about trades. Last question.
He has reached out about both Bucky Irving and Braylon Allen.
Wow. Deep cuts for Austin.
So he's planning for the future here because JT and Saquon are both, you know, getting older. Even though they both have contracts, I don't think he should be trading for these guys. I think he can wait it out and maybe draft a running back. But no, they're both rookies, and Bucky clearly has an established role in the offense. Braylon not so much yet, but he has shown the potential of being like at least he could be a running back by committee and maybe get like 30-40% of touches. So his ceiling is there, and like there's no way I'm giving, especially with the state of my team, like I need to hold on to as many young assets as possible.
To be honest, I don't even know if I would trade Bucky for Saquon straight up.
Yes, you would.
Young RB1? Come on, guys. No, you got to hold on to Bucky. Braylon, yeah, sure, I would do it. I would do it for Braylon, but Bucky's scary. All right, Angad, thank you for sharing with us on your team. We got a couple more things to cover before we run. We had some trades happened this week, a couple of decent ones. First one, Sam Darnold. Colin trades for Sam Darnold a second round pick. I'm looking up the exact details of the deal. If one of you guys have it pulled up, I think it's like a 2025 second round pick.
2026.
Okay, 2026. Yeah. Whose pick is it?
I'm going.
Is it Collins?
I want to go make sure I get this right. He trades his own 2026 second round pick. That is a nice asset. And there's a lot of potential there for it to be a good asset. I'm thinking that is at best case scenario, that's 2.5 for Colin. So early to mid second round pick is where you would guess that. I'm loving this trade for Sloan. I don't think anybody thought that Sam Darnold would be a player that you would be able to trade for a second round pick. I mean, we traded Geno for a second round pick before this year, which it's crazy that Sam Darnold and Geno aren't worth the same place. I will say Sam Darnold does have the potential to continue to be a starting QB after this season, even if it's not with the Vikings and they move on to JJ or keep him around. So a good deal to get a starting QB for Colin. What do you guys think about it?
I think it's a good deal on both sides. Like, I think it makes a lot of sense for Sloan to go get value for a guy like Sam Darnold. But I also think Sam Darnold has played himself into a starting quarterback job somewhere next year, like you were mentioning. So I, you know, and for a team like Collins, I think it raises his floor just a little bit to be able to have, you know, another kind of consistent option at quarterback.
What do you think?
Yeah, I love this deal for Sloan. I hate this deal for Colin. And the reason I say that is because I think Sam Darnold, yes, he is shown to be a solid quarterback. But Kevin O'Connell is a great coach. And this is reminding me of the Case Keenum year when they went to the NFC Championship and what happened to Case Keenum after that. Nothing. So I think this is a huge risk for Colin to give up his own second round pick for a quarterback that could potentially just go back to being a backup after 1 year.
I would agree with you as well, Angad. I think that Colin already has Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Derek Carr, and Spencer Rattler as the backup. He's got three QBs in some form across those four players. I think when you're a bad team, that's enough. No offense, Colin. Your team has been the worst team this league so far. But it seems to me like a bit of a luxury trade to be able to trade a second round pick away. Now, if you truly believe Sam Darnold has like 5 to 10 years starting caliber in him, then it's great. But it's kind of like the Baker Mayfield effect, where I think even if Sam Darnold continues to be decent for the next 4 or 5 years as a starting QB, you will never be able to extract that value out of him. I don't know what people would be willing to pay for Baker right now, but paying a first round pick for Baker would hurt, I think, if you were doing that deal. And so I don't see how Colin gets a ton more value out of this unless Sam Darnold is a top 10 QB for multiple years in a row and then can actually sell him. Yeah, and then you could play him, but I don't know. You're not loving ever if you're starting Sam Darnold. You're never like, this is great.
I tried to get Sam Darnold at the beginning of the season from Sloan because I knew I was going to be without a quarterback starting for 2 of the weeks this year. And I tried to like get him for basically the equivalent of a fourth round pick. I tried to package him in for the Joe Mixon deal, and Sloan didn't bite. But I and that's credit to him. I don't think he should have bit, because Sam Darnold is a starting quarterback this year for the entirety of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been good. Any other thoughts? Anyone?
I just want to throw out there that Sloan, the deal we were talking about, bad trades in the first season of the league, the deal that that Sloan had with Mike to acquire Sam Darnold was Sam Darnold, a 2023 first round pick, his own, Juju Smith-Schuster and Tyrod Taylor. So just 3 years ago, Sam Darnold dealt for a first.
That was a bad trade when it happened. It was bad when it happened. We all knew it. Because that was the Carolina year. You're just like, oh, this guy sucks. He sucks. Yeah. He had the same kind of thing in Carolina where he was good those first few games, and then he just went horrible.
He had a lot of rushing points. I remember.
He played in. So Sloan acquired him halfway through 2021. So he probably got 5 or 6 games from him because he only played in 12. In 21, he only played in 6 games in 2022, finished as quarterback 36. He played in 10 games with San Francisco, so he was the backup in 2023, finished as quarterback 55. So Sloan traded a first round pick for quarterback 29, 36, and 55.
It will be really interesting to see, because Sam Darnold, those first 4 years in our first 4 games in Carolina, 19 points, 17 points, 23 points, 31 points, fantasy points. He did have 5 rushing touchdowns over those games. So there you go. But game 5, 6 points, then 15, 2, 11, 0.78 benched. In Minnesota right now, we're at 14, 17, 22, 20, game 5, 4 points. Do we see a similar kind of Sam Darnold trajectory? History might repeat itself. Live for us. And fortunately, Sloan has the chance to be on the right side of it. But I love that call out, Brian. Thank you for referencing his original value. So second trade, we see David Montgomery and a 3rd round pick for 2 second round picks. The one in 2025 is mine, and the one in 2026 is Ongood's. Obviously, David Montgomery, I think, was a pretty hot commodity. There was some interest. I was interested in David Montgomery. I actually offered the exact same trade as Mike. So David Montgomery and a 3rd. I wanted the 2025 3rd from Mike instead of the 2026 from Sloan. And I offered a 2025 2nd from Mike and a 2026 2nd from me, I think. So the picks were a little bit different, but it was the exact same. Or this 2026 second was Brian's. So probably, you know, I don't know. Depends on what you think about Brian's team. I probably a playoff team next year. But Matt ends up going with Mike's offer. I'll start on this one. I like the deal for Mike. It's a good running back to get over Najee. You want some depth, especially with the Nico Collins injury. I think he'll be glad to have a bit more. I mean, Mike has a deep team, but a lot of guys where they're very boom bust. And I think David Montgomery is fairly consistent. I know we talked about him being touchdown dependent, but I like the deal overall for Mike. And 2 seconds, I think, is a relatively small price to pay for a running back that just got paid. You're not giving up that much. And with those picks, his 2nd my second this year, probably like a late second, I think you can say pretty comfortably, and you're getting, you know, maybe a weird wide receiver that nobody really wants, or a running back that was taken in the third round there. So I like the deal. What do you guys think?
I think I agree. I think it makes a ton of sense for Mike. Like, this is, you know, just 2 weeks ago we were talking about how this is a great chance for him to go cash in for an RB2. And I think he did a nice job of, you know, getting a startable player every single week, you know, with a very high floor, you know, while not having to part with top tier assets. I also think it's a smart move for Matt in that I think in a vacuum, David Montgomery is probably worth a little bit more than those, you know, those specific seconds. But if you're Matt, like, you have to cash in on David Montgomery now. Like, there, you gain nothing from waiting till the offseason. You gain nothing from waiting another year. Like, David Montgomery is not going to be on Matt's next playoff team. Go get value for him now before an injury, before a benching, before Jahmyr Gibbs like becomes the best running back in the league and takes more touches, you know, whatever that may be. So I think it makes a ton of sense for both teams. I think I was also involved in the David Montgomery bidding. I was sitting at, I forget what my last offer to him was. I think it was Michael Pittman and a third or something along those lines. So there were some interesting offers out there. I believe there was, I think Austin was also involved in the bidding. I loved the way this went down. This felt like trade deadline from 2 years ago, where it was like everybody was bouncing back and forth, and, you know, Matt was kind of pitting people against each other to try and increase offers. So I thought it was a lot of fun to see this go down. So yeah, good deal all around. Angad, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I echo everything that you said there, Brian. I think it's a great deal for both parties here, but I do think he could have gotten a little bit more from David Montgomery, considering how well he plays within how well he produces within that system in Detroit.
I also offered Matt a first round pick for Montgomery and a second round pick. Would you have preferred that deal to this framework?
100%.
It was my first for Montgomery and what would have been Sloan's second next year. So you're moving up 6-7 picks maybe for Montgomery. Do you like that more than getting the seconds, the late seconds, mid to late seconds?
That's, I don't see why not.
He wasn't interested at all. He wanted the seconds. He wanted more picks. He wanted volume over the assets.
I guess I think 6-7 picks is rich. I think it's probably more likely to be 2 or 3 picks. If I was betting, I would bet on you to win the league, just like we've talked about.
You've been betting that for a while.
You have a trash ass team, so
exactly.
It may not happen, but I mean, I think I would call it trading pick 10 for pick 12 or 13.
Interesting.
I do think I would do that deal though, just to guarantee yourself the top 10 versus the, you know, the wider range in the second round. But
late second is tough. You don't like the late second round. I feel like you want to be at 2.5 and earlier. 2.5 to 3.5, pretty similar, unless it's a super deep draft, right? You're still just kind of throwing darts. And if you really like a dart throw, then it's great. But for the most part, I think it's scary. Interesting, though, totally, that you guys would have taken that deal. I wish you had David Montgomery, because we would have been good trade partners.
We would have been.
Yeah, that one hurt to miss out on. I obviously put Calvin Ridley up on the trade block, still available for any of you guys if you're interested in getting some nice target share last week. So if you like targets, we need to do a point per target league, maybe. I like that.
I'll give you a fourth for him, Josh.
Malik,
you convinced
Neighbors.
Me to buy vets.
I will take any second round pick for Calvin Ridley, and I will take 2 third round picks for Calvin Ridley. Just putting it out there.
How about anybody 2 fourths?
No, I will not take 2 fourths. This man just got paid. This team sucks ass.
They don't have a quarterback.
They're horrible. Yes, they don't have a quarterback. Will Levis, undoubtedly, after this year, this is the end of Will Levis, right?
I don't think so.
This is it. So It's only up from here. You're buying Calvin Ridley at the lowest. I think maybe his value is lower than when he was suspended for a year. I think it might actually be lower.
That's accurate.
Okay. Yeah, I am. Okay, so that is the main content. The last thing we have is Mike's Corner. This is a little segment for me just to kind of share how I'm feeling about Mike Wood. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously still on the taxi squad. I think that's just out of spite rather than like being an actually good play at this point. The next thing is, you know, it's an obvious one, but man can't start a quarterback when he has five QBs on his team. I mean, you're really that keen on Anthony Richardson that you're like, I'm going to take the risk to start him in the afternoon games. Now, it's hard to complain when he finishes first. So, you know, like I said, this isn't always going to be fair. But you can't depend on luck every week. I think it's pretty disappointing. I can't remember the last time we actually had someone in the league not start a QB. And typically it was a team that was quite bad and, you know, wasn't willing to invest the asset for a bye week. So that's probably my big Mike gripe for the week. Team's looking really good. I mean, he's cruising right now. That Montgomery ad is a big win for him. But overall, I think, you know, just about anybody else could have set a better lineup than him last week. So go ahead and start Trevor Lawrence. If you have the
team roster. I think it is also fair to say, though, that the Colts screwed him with that. Like, when is the last time that a quarterback went from probable to not playing in the last hour before the game?
I think that's a sign, and obviously all the Colts fans in the group will know better. Is Anthony Richardson actually healthy and he just got benched?
I have strong opinions on there. Anthony Richardson, like we discussed in the group a little bit, Anthony Richardson is about to play his eighth game in the NFL. So any commentary about how good or bad he is, I feel like you should also be willing to have about any rookie quarterback in the league. And I don't think there's any rookie quarterback that you can definitively say is a bust or is a, you know, is good. It's too early.
Eight games, seven interceptions, six passing touchdowns through those eight games, I will say.
But no, that's not true. Last year, he had zero interceptions.
He had one interception last year. I'm looking at the stats right now.
But he played four games. Okay, so four games from last year, four games from this year.
Yep. In his four games this year, he has three throwing touchdowns, six interceptions.
How many rushing touchdowns?
He has one rushing touchdown this year, four last year.
Okay.
So he was a Gator, and a lot of people in Gainesville do not think he's going to pan out.
I think he's legit. I will.
50% completion percentage. Brian,
what was his completion percentage last year, Josh?
It was.
I'll answer it for you. It was 59, which is essentially like one tick below the NFL average. So are the four games from last year an outlier or the four games from this year an outlier? That's what I ask you.
Six picks is a lot of picks. I mean, look at Joe Flacco. He's kind of cooking over there with that receiving core. Like
Josh Allen had like 17 picks at this point last year.
Yeah, but the receiving core in Indy is it? I don't think you can really point to the fact that, I mean, this is me building on my Mike's Corner, so this is perfect. Thank you for getting me into this, Brian.
Of course.
You're a little scared if you're Mike. I mean, maybe you get Brian wanting to trade for Anthony Richardson, but I think the overall appetite in the league to trade for this guy right now is pretty low. This would be a huge risky asset to trade for at this point.
He's like when I traded for Trey Lance.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah, the Trey Lance deal, that was horrible. It would be like trading for Trey Lance right now. Yeah. Yep.
I think there's a difference. Like, he is a very risky dynasty asset. I'm talking specifically about him as an NFL quarterback, you know, on the field.
Like him as an NFL quarterback?
I do. Yeah.
No way, Brian.
I think he's the best. He's the best athlete in the NFL. And I think there is your floor as an NFL player. Like, he is injury prone. That is, at least so far, that is a separate commentary. But if he is healthy, he's the best athlete on the field. And there's a long history of elite athletes being able to have long, successful, very successful careers, very high peaks.
Yeah.
RG3, Cam Newton, Josh Allen. And I would also argue RG3's peak was pretty high.
It was high. It was for the peak was high. No. Yeah. It was short, but it was high.
It was short, but Cam Newton, Josh Allen, like that's the mold.
The one thing I will give Mike is that injuries, I think, are a weird thing to be like super down on a player on, because it, like, maybe a player is eternally injured, like, you know, Michael Thomas, right? And truly never gets to come back because they're just injured all the time. But you would expect that he will eventually have a season where he can play a full set of games, like that. This is just kind of freak stuff. But yeah, you're terrified. It's just,
I told Matt this the other day. If you had a quarterback that played five seasons in the NFL and had a season-ending injury 4 weeks into his next season, came back, you know, came back this season, played a couple games, got hurt for a couple games, and came back, nobody would be calling him injury prone or fragile or anything like that. The fact that it has been the first season of his career is what has led to that. So now,
second season,
essentially, like, if over a 5-year time period, Anthony Richardson has a single season ending injury and has a season where he misses a couple of games but is otherwise healthy, that's not a talking point. But we wouldn't be talking about this if it was flipped.
It's because if in 3 years a quarterback plays, you'll know if he's good in 3 years, right? So if he gets injured, you're like, okay, this is worth waiting for.
Yeah.
If your quarterback can't play once you draft them, they essentially hold the team hostage in terms of not drafting another quarterback when this guy could suck, right? And if he comes back and plays next year, or maybe he stays healthy the rest of this year, you still have to give him a whole nother year. So because of the injuries, what could have been a 1-year exercise turns into probably a 3-year exercise, because this is his rookie year. And so I think that's where it is a different framework to evaluate this kind of injury than like a Kyler Murray, for example, who tore his ACL at the end of his like fourth year. And I'm not saying Kyler Murray is great. He's definitely has question marks, but you're taking Kyler over Anthony Richardson right now, I think, without a question. You're not?
No, sorry. I would. I just, I want to push back on the, Do you truly believe Anthony Richardson is a bad football player?
He's never been a good quarterback.
He's never been a good quarterback. Not even in college. He has incredible arm talent. Like that's unquestionable. But his accuracy is so bad.
His accuracy wasn't that bad last year. Like he was a 60%.
He only threw 84 passes, Brian. 84 passes. And so on what? 50 completions, it was for 577 yards, right? It's not like he's throwing, like, it's 10 yards a catch, pretty much. Like, that's low. Like, he's throwing dump offs at 60%. Yeah. The completion percentage is helpful and unhelpful, right? If it's really high, it could be just you check it down a lot. But if it's really low, it's like, that's when it's scary, because it should be easy to complete dump.
Josh Allen coming out of college was the same issue, right? But at least he was healthy. And he was able to develop by getting playing time. Like, Anthony Richardson is going to – he's such a raw talent, and he's not able to take the field.
Yeah. I guess that's my point, though, that, like, I think it's wrong to say he is a bad football player. I think it is.
I don't think he's a bad football player.
Okay. I actually think it's even wrong to say he's a bad quarterback. I think he is a very talented quarterback. I think in aspect, the accuracy, there's been 4 games where he's had bad accuracy. There's been 4 games where he's had decently good accuracy. I think the real point here is that we have not had a chance to evaluate him.
Sure. Would you take Jaden Daniels over Anthony Richardson right now?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You've only seen him play 4 or 5. What,
yeah. 5 games? I agree. But the peak of Jaden Daniels has been higher than the peak of Anthony Richardson. But I think there is a possibility that the peak of Anthony Richardson and still ends up being higher than Jaden Daniels.
I would love to revisit this next year.
I understand that it's a hot take. I just think it's malpractice as fans say that he should be benched or that he's bad or whatever.
I'm not saying he should be, but do you think he is getting benched?
No, I think the Colts are coddling him.
Okay.
Is what I think is happening.
Me posting that message in the group me about like because Anthony Richardson sucks and Joe Flacco is decent is just pure bait for Mike. Like I don't watch any fucking Colts games. I haven't watched a Colts game in like years, right? Like it's just me out there with the fishing rod throwing it into the group me just and then just letting it sit out there. So yeah, I on this one, Brian, though, I think Mike might be holding a gun to your head off screen to say that you think he's really good. but we'll see what happens. This is, you know, Mike's corner can live on for a long time. This will be a fun one to discuss.
Mike, you need to sell Anthony Richardson as fast as possible.
Anthony Richardson for Justin Herbert straight up right now, Brian? Is that what I'm hearing?
We did have talks about Justin Herbert this week. So, you know, a little tidbit, but. So really? maybe that's something to revisit.
Okay.
But no,
I'll reach out to you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Go right ahead.
all right, gentlemen. We've been going for a long time. I want to get off and hang out for a little bit. Thank you for staying on with us so late. Sorry for the abrupt ending, but I'm holding the living room hostage right now with this. So I need to move on. It's been wonderful talking to both of you. Thank you for a great conversation. I hope you both have a great week.
You too, Josh. And you too, Brian. Thanks for having us.
See you, Brian. See you on good.
See ya.